Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to Ace time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
All of those things just hit different today than they do on a normal day. That sequence of things that you heard, that the preamble that you hear coming into the show every day. Oh, give me some juice, baby. Let's do it. All of those things hit. Even Ben Gary in our ear right before the open hit saying, here we go. Here we go is all caps, size 72 font today, because Brandon Scott, Texans training camp is here. Texans training camp with a dash of Bryce Matthews sprinkled on top of it today.
Dude, it's the moment that I've been waiting for. Now, if Bryce Matthews aside, we'll get to him in a little bit, but Bryce Matthews, but I mean, Texans training camp out here on the grass before the Texans hit the field. And I don't want to hear anybody say that, hey, the season doesn't start until the first game, training camp doesn't start. No, football season, Texans season officially started right now under the sound of our voice with us right here at the Methodist Training Center.
100%, 100%, and we are right on top of it. We are stationed. This is probably good to know once the fans are able to start coming out here next week to watch. Our spot where we are is we're kind of at the corner of the end zone, right next to the gate where the players come walking in. Players and coaches are going to be walking right by us, probably starting at about right about the time we're going off the air today. Yep. At about 8 a.m. is when people start to matriculate in here. And, dude, there's no X's and O's. There's nothing technical I want to get to anytime right out of the chute. I want to talk football. I'm just excited that this Texan season is here. I feel strongly this is the most talented roster top to bottom they've put together. This is the roster they've certainly put together that's the most built to last for a long, long time as well. And I'm just amped for the season, man. The Rams game in week one cannot get here soon enough. I want to get excited for this. I want a dueling piano with you. All the things I'm pumped up about for this Texan season coming
up. Man, I'm right there with you, man. Right. Even the little things, man. Just looking at the bridge.
The bridge.
Oh, right there on Kirby.
All right, Ben, hit the music.
Let's go.
Let's hit the music. I'm going to let you start. That bridge right there.
Dude.
Watching the players come over top of the bridge for practice at about 8:30, 8:40 this morning is when they'll start to come over here.
And not just this morning, but for the next not 17 weeks, but however, this
6 weeks,
six weeks of the training camp, the 17 weeks of the season, that bridge right there, diagonal to my right, coming across Kirby, that's where the players come. The Houston Texans social media team likes to prompt the guys with fun questions, put them on their social media page. I'm even ready for the simple things just like that. The bridge right there on freaking Kirby.
This is the most excited I've been about a bridge since I went to the Niners-Texans game in San Francisco back in 2013. Bridge over Kirby. I start envisioning things happening during the season. And the thing that pops into my head, and I need 17 games of this year.
Let's go.
Not just 10 games or 12 games of this. Nico Collins just mossing people.
Yes.
Mossing people, trucking people, running people over, throwing them down by their face, tie-facing them in the end zone like he did to Jalen Johnson or whichever Tyreek Stevenson, whichever Chicago DB that was last year that got into his face, and then two plays later, that guy's getting chokeslammed like the Undertaker into the end zone. But I need that. I need 17 weeks of that this year.
And Nico Collins reminding Tyreek Stevenson that, hey, this is weight room right here. There's pain up in here if you come up in here incorrect. Since you're on Nico Collins, let's stay there. Sean, how about the dadgum scramble drill?
Oh,
I can't wait to see the Nico scramble drill. You remember in the beginning of the season, the first few weeks of the season, that essentially was their offense. Now, I'm not looking forward to the idea of that solely being their offense.
Yeah.
I want them to have more answers than just that. But you better believe that the scramble drill is going to be heavily featured by the Houston Texans between C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins. Brother, I cannot wait for it.
I can't either. I hope you're right, though. I hope it does have a break glass in case of emergency status this year, as opposed to
this is
our third best play that we run. But yes, I'm here for it. Speaking of that, the guy on the other end of those plays, C.J. Stroud.
Okay,
I don't want this to happen as much this year. But there's something about C.J. Stroud under duress, hands in his face, hands on his arms, and still somehow finding a way to zip that laser out there, man.
Dude,
C.J. under pressure throwing dimes I'm here for that this morning, man, and the next 7 months.
Dude, how about on the other side of the ball? Derek Stingley Jr. picking off dudes like it's nobody's, like it's like there's no tomorrow.
Stingley's ball skills.
Derek Stingley on defense looking like he's playing offense. That's one of the things I'm excited for.
Okay, that's a great one. That's a great one. I'm going to stick on I'm going back over to the
Let's
offense.
Let's do it. Let's do it. We can ping pong. We got offense.
We can do this all day long.
Come on.
Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb in the same backfield.
Ooh.
Running over people, running around people. If Nick Chubb, what percent of peak Nick Chubb gets us excited this season? I don't expect him to be 5 yards a carry, 1,600-yard Nick Chubb. He'd have made more than $2 million. But what percent of Nick Chubb gets you fired up for this season?
Let's put it at a passing grade, 70%. When I was in school, 70. At some people's school, it was 60. Yeah. I'm not going to settle for 60.
Yeah.
70% of Nick Chubb, and I'm praying.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we get 70% of Nick Chubb. That 100% is going to be it for me. If he's 70%,
dude,
I think you've got at the very least a number two running back.
Think about that. A year ago, in 2023, they're trotting out Devin Singletary and Damian Pierce, and now we're trotting out. We're going to watch the backs of the jerseys sitting here, you and I, of number 28 Mixon and number 21 Chubb running onto this practice field together.
I mean, obviously.
That's exciting.
Obviously, the level of play of those guys is its own thing, but they even just look different.
Yes.
Right? The backfield even just looks different.
See, yeah.
You went offense. I'm going to go back on the defense real quick on this one. How about Will Anderson Jr.? Looking like a rabid dog chasing after dudes.
Yeah.
Like Will Anderson Jr.'s motor, it's something to almost envy. Because it's like, I mean, how does this guy never turn it off? Will Anderson Jr., running after guys like a rabid dog, never quitting on the play. It's really what makes him special. I can't wait to see
it. He's, you know, wherever he is right now, it's 6 in the morning. I'm guessing he's in the building. He's on right now.
Oh, he's salivating.
He's on right now.
He can't even touch the quarterback.
No.
You think he knows it? He'll know it once he gets out here, but he's going out here with the mentality, man, I'm going out here and chasing dudes down.
He's scary, right? He's scary, Will Anderson.
Yes.
Guess what? He's only the second scariest guy on that defensive line. He's only the second scariest defensive end on this team.
How about that?
Because you got Danielle Hunter, who looks like he was built in a lab.
Yeah, he's
coming
a
out here.
He's a cyborg
to get another 13 sacks or whatever it is this year. This defense. Segment aside, gimmick aside, music underneath us aside. It could be 8:30 at night sitting in my chair at home, and I just think about this defense, and I get amped up. Think of the dogs, man. The two guys we just named, Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, Azeez Alshire, dog, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, dog, Kamari Lassiter. I can't wait for the first thing that gets Kamari Lassiter to slap himself in the head 20 times. And I don't mean in week one. I'm talking about hour one of practice.
Oh, yeah.
That's how these practices operate out here. They operate like it's week one of the regular season. Dude, Stingley, Petrie, Kalen Bullock.
Dude, you've already named a couple of other dogs that I want to get to. Azeez Alshire.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Texans fans, let us know. Who other than me is out here excited about Azeez Alshire towing that line? Towing the line?
Me. I'm raising
my
hand.
Maybe crossing it a little bit, but not quite enough. I'm not excited about the idea of him crossing it enough to be suspended. So Azeez Alshire being a habitual line stepper and towing that line, but not quite enough to get him suspended and miss games.
You know what? Offense, defense, special teams. I am excited to watch Frank Ross hyped up like he just won Fast Money on Family Feud.
Whew.
You ever watch Fast Money on Family Feud, B. Scott?
Of course.
The bonus money thing at the end, and when families win, they're all just
every Frank
knee, fist pumping. That's Frank Ross after every hit out here at practice. I can't wait. If we all have Frank Ross's energy during this training camp and regular season, this season's going into February.
Dude,
man.
Let's go.
If we all just channel Frank Ross, it's going to February this
How
year,
about
man.
The confidence of one? I'm going to give you an underrated one.
Yeah.
A death piece. How about the confidence of one Tim Settle? This is an inside media thing for me, but one of the things I can't wait for is looking at Tim Settle at his locker talking mad smack like he's Aaron Donald or somebody. And that's not a dig. I appreciate the irrational confidence. I every now and then have a little bit of irrational confidence to me. Tim Settle out here not only making plays, but once we get to the locker room, standing next to his locker, like, what you gonna do?
Yeah.
I'm Tim Settle.
It's right. Well, and I hope that whole room of interior defensive linemen channel that attitude.
Yeah.
Because they were disrespected by ESPN this week.
They were.
ESPN called them the weak link on this team. And I don't think they're the weak link at all.
No.
Not a bunch of Pro Bowlers there, but those are a bunch of guys that are the perfect complement to the Pro Bowlers that you do have in that front seven. I am excited for those guys as well. Dude, this list is so long of stuff I'm pumped up about this year.
Oh, man, it's way more to get to than just a 12-minute segment.
Cody Stutes' top 11 Texans, and I'm like, I could add like seven more to this right now.
Shout out to Cody Stutes. I'm looking forward to his list and his newsletter and Texans football
and all of
the content that we're going to be creating here at Sports Radio 610, all of our peers in the media.
Yeah, man.
Dude, I can't wait to consume it all.
It's going
to
be great. It's going to be great. All right, so we're fired up. As you can tell, we're fired up for the season.
Let's go, man.
Fired up for camp. We got updates that we need to get to a little later on this hour as to the injury sheet, knock on wood, looks really good right now for the Texans.
Yeah,
there's going to be some guys that are working in a little slowly out here, understandably so. You know, Mixon was in a walking boot during the spring. I'm guessing he's not getting the full workload right out of the chute, but the reports are all good on whatever it was that was ailing him. You know, a few other guys here and there. Danico Autry is going to get worked in a little bit slowly. But by and large, Jalen Nowell back. He missed minicamp because of a hamstring. So we'll get a look at the rookie today. Get a look at both rookie wide receivers today. We didn't even mention any of the rookies on the team. I'm super fired up for Jaden Higgins to be looking across the way and channeling himself into Nico 2.0. I'm excited about that. I just can't wait, man. It's here.
Man.
We're sitting out here looking at the practice field.
Woody Marks as a running back that adds a different element and a different dynamic to the offense.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I don't think they have another running back that's quite like him. I know we're talking about a rookie, but I can't wait to see him out there playing. This is what we're here for. And I should point out that training camp, since you talked about health, it's football, but it's also about getting some of these guys that are dealing with stuff, getting them right and getting them healthy.
Yeah.
So even that part is something to be excited about. Even if they're not out here playing just yet, the fact that they're out here getting themselves ready for week one. Let's go.
Fans will be out here starting next week. Until then, we are your eyes and ears out here at Texans training camp here on Sports Radio 610. We've got you covered wall to wall. Texans radio will be up at 8 o'clock today, John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. And then after that, In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atatula. They will be out here from 10 to 2 every day. They'll be getting guys off the practice field, interview style. We're going to hear from Nick Caserio at 8:30 a.m. today. We're going to hear from D'Amico Ryans after practice. Have not found out who the players are. I will effort that and find out which players we're going to hear from today. I'm guessing it's the headliners, but we'll find out. I'll check with Texans Media Relations. But it's here, man. Football, I'm with you, B. Scott. There are a lot of people who say football season is here. They go, no, it starts in week one. If it starts for week one in you, that's fine. I'm not going to tell you how to fan.
Yeah,
but I'm telling you right now, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people that circle. They're texting me right now, and they're texting the show that circle July 23rd as the day where this whole thing gets kicked off.
Yeah, don't rain on our parade, baby. Yeah. We're here ready for football season.
We got umbrellas.
We're
fine. We're good.
Let's do it.
All right, we're off and running, as you can tell, on a Wednesday. Texans training camp is here. Let's make sure we get to the Astros in the next segment, because there is something happening with the Astros right now, and his name is Bryce Matthews. We'll get to that. Also, four camps that I am interested in outside of Houston. The four NFL training, because training camp's getting started everywhere today. The four that I'm most intrigued by, when I get back home and I'm done with the Texans for the day and I open up my iPad, these are the four I'll be looking at. We'll get to that as well. We got headlines later in the hour. It is going to be a rapid-fire show today, man. 6 to 8 a.m. here on Payne and Pendergast. B. Scott in for Seth Payne. Seth back tomorrow. Stay there. You're listening to Sports Radio 610.
Bryce Matthews gets into one deep to left field, and the Astros have the lead. Bryce Matthews continues here in Arizona. Third home run in two games, and just like that, the Astros have awakened to a 2-1 lead.
The Bryce is right.
A lot less mystery on that home run than there was on Bryce Matthews' first career home run that he hit on Monday, the three-run home run to take the lead they didn't relinquish on Monday. Same thing last night. Well, same thing in general last night. It happened much later in the game this time around. Bryce Matthews, the local kid out of Atascocita, with his third home run in two games of the nine runs that the Astros have scored against the Arizona Diamondbacks in these first two games of this series, Bryce Matthews has driven in seven of those runs, a five RBI night on Monday, and then last night, that two-run home run with the Astros trailing 1-0 late in the game. This was in the eighth inning he hit that. Framber Valdez walked off the mound last night, trailing 1-0, pitched another gem. Framber's been one of the best pitchers in baseball, if not the best pitcher in baseball, over the course of the last couple of months. They haven't lost a Framber Valdez pitched game in 13 outings, but Bryce Matthews made sure that that was the case. Top of the eighth hits that two-run home run. They go on to win 3-1. Danced with the devil, B. Scott, in the bottom of the ninth. No Josh Hader last night because he pitched the night before, so they brought in Brian King to get the save. And six pitches in, he had loaded the bases.
Yeah, and they were talking about once he gets up there how it would be his first career save in major leagues.
Yeah,
and it looked
got
like
his money's worth.
It definitely looked like it's like, oh, if you weren't to tell me ahead of time that this guy's never done this before, never been in this position before in the big leagues, oh, it would be apparent once they get up there. But you mentioned Framber and how the Astros have won 13 consecutive starts from Framber.
Yeah.
Framber's a known commodity. We know what he is. He's a top-line pitcher, front-of-line pitcher. We understand that. All-star last year and previous years.
Going to be very wealthy about 6 months
from now. Going to be very wealthy very soon. And I parts of me wish it was the Astros that was paying, but I've already grown to accept that. Moving on, though, on this Bryce Matthews thing, we understand Framber's role and his importance to the team. We're starting to understand now, we're getting to see what Bryce Matthews could mean to the Astros. And even before we get that far, just the fact that he won you two games against Arizona.
He won you two games. And we got to point out, it wasn't just the offense last night.
Oh, the end of the game.
The double play to close out the game. Man, if that – boy, Brian King got lucky, man. I mean, if that ball is hit in about 90% of the other places in the infield, that is a tie ball game, and you're going into extras. If going into extras, maybe lose the game because Brian King was scuffling. Bryce Matthews he's like he was breakdancing out there, just comes up with the ball, double play. He did it with his glove and his bat last
night.
Dude,
you don't even need a great imagination to play out the exact scenario that you just played out, because I feel like earlier in that inning to load the bases, one of the plays was Bryce Matthews batting down a ball from getting to the outfield but wasn't able to quite make the play.
Yep.
And so that's what it looks like, right? What if it's just, you know, a game of inches when you talk about that? What if he just isn't able to get there, isn't able to make that play? But on top of that, you got the defense, you got the offense. And then again, the importance of – I've been talking about this all week, how I don't want to underplay one of 162. When you're in a race like this, when you're dealing with the adversity that the Astros have been dealing with for the entire year – every game matters. All of the pieces matter. And I'll point out again, Bryce Matthews just got you two. Just got you two on the way to the race.
Yeah, I mean, it's still obviously very, very early in his career. But the fact that he's starting to look more comfortable. I mean, he's got four hits and three of them are home runs. The fact that he's starting to look more comfortable, I don't know that he would even be up with the big league club if they hadn't had all these injuries. In fact, I'm fairly certain he wouldn't be. If it turns out that he's, and I'm getting way ahead of myself, but if it turns out that he's even an average hitter and what he's doing on defense, you know, he may be a high strikeout, high home run guy. If that's who he is, that's who he is. But if it turns out that all these injuries are the reason you stumbled into what was the one position that was sort of a revolving door for you coming into the year, that you might have stumbled into this solution at second base and he happens to be a guy who's under your control for the next 6 years, that would be a nice silver lining to come out of what has been a snake bit injury team. And we should add Lance McCullers back to the IL with a blister on his hand.
It's like a tradition. It's like a tradition. But with Bryce Matthews, man, it's interesting that you point out that, yeah, you know, who knows if he would even be here if not for all of these injuries.
Yeah.
But also, it is the one position that's been a revolving door, one of the few positions of need, positions of issue, if you will, for the Astros. Bryce Matthews could have very well been a solution whether they were injured or not, because otherwise you're talking about, hey, is it Brendan Rodgers?
Yeah.
Is it one of these other guys that's kind of really a minor leaguer? Or is it the ascending, you know, first round pick, the chosen one, if you will, Bryce Matthews? So, and again, man, without even getting ahead of ourselves, even just if we isolate it to right now, this year, the run that they're on, we'll be able to look back, whatever the Astros do in the postseason, we'll be able to look back and say, hey, you remember back in mid to late July, when Bryce Matthews helped you get two games that allowed you to either win the division or, hey, we were just talking about this in the break, get the number one seed. Like, there's a couple of different races going on simultaneously here for the Astros, and Bryce Matthews just helped the Astros in a great way.
Astros are tied in the loss column now for tops in the AL with Toronto and the Tigers. The only thing keeping the Tigers out in front, they played one more game and they won it. They're 60-42. The Blue Jays and the Astros, both 59-42. The Astros, five games up in the AL West. So we'll circle back to them in headlines, but another good night for the Astros out in the desert. Day game today out there, I believe 2:40, something like that, first pitch for the Astros. All right, we're at Texans training camp. We had our hype segment in the beginning. We'll do another one in the 7 o'clock hour. All the things that B. Scott and I are just hyped about for camp and the season coming up. There are other things going around the NFL that I want to get to, and some of them impact the Texans because it's in the division. There are other training camps that I'm keeping eyes on throughout this. Texans obviously get the lion's share of my attention and most of our attention, 90% of it. But the other 10%, B. Scott, as I've kind of do my afternoon thing where I'm kind of flipping through the other camps, seeing what's going on. The four camps that are most intriguing to me outside of here. Number one, and this does impact the Texans because they play them twice a year, every year, and in week three of this season, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ooh. And solely because of the Travis Hunter, I'm going to call it an experiment right now because I know they're hell-bent. Well, we know from the Magnificent Gladstone. Ben, I'm going to skip the audio on this just because we're crunched for time and the Magnificent Gladstone rambles for a minute and a half in this particular cut. But everybody knows the cut I'm talking about.
Long-winded-ass
Travis Hunter's going to change the game of football, and he's going to change everybody's lives. Like Travis Hunter is some sort of combination of Charles Woodson and Tony Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
The self-help guy. Like, Travis Hunter's going to change everybody's life because he plays cornerback and wide receiver. I am anxious to see how exactly they execute this experiment.
Well, and don't forget, obviously, the Magnificent Gladstone clearly discovered Travis Hunter. This gym. Like, at least that's the way it sounded when he talked about it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, he just discovered this
nobody else knew about
hidden commodity that we'd never heard of, this Travis Hunter guy who came out of nowhere, apparently.
Magnificent Gladstone sees the world differently than the rest of us do.
Yeah.
That's his message.
100%. You know what? As an offshoot, and I know we're going to do this again in the 7 o'clock hour, but as an offshoot, I am interested to see which one is going to happen first, since you brought it up,
yeah.
The Travis Hunter thing. Which one is going to happen first? Is Nico Collins going to burn Travis Hunter,
yeah.
Or is Derek Stingley, as he's known to do, picking off Trevor Lawrence,
yeah.
Is he going to clamp Travis Hunter and pick off a Trevor Lawrence pass attempt to said Travis Hunter.
Who was it that
Which said, one's going to happen first?
Yeah, yeah. Who was it? Oh, it was Jake Andrews that said on Texans radio, people are going to know when they wake up on Monday that they played the Texans.
Yes.
Travis Hunter's going to wake up on Mondays knowing he played the Texans.
Yeah. Well,
you're going against Nico on one side and Stingley on the other side of the ball for 120 snaps or whatever it is.
To be fair, if they are pot committed to this whole playing both ways thing, Travis Hunter's going to wake up in the morning knowing he played anybody.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Because they're going to run him into the damn ground.
But
especially the case with the Texans because of what they've got at wide receiver and what they've got at cornerback, those positions specifically that he also plays,
yeah.
But he would be going against when he's playing the other, the Texans are strong in both areas.
Jacksonville's number one. Number two is Dallas. This is the latest update. This is from Adam Schefter on the Micah Parsons situation with his contract.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the Dallas Cowboys have not even made a contractual offer to Micah Parsons yet. So this is a conversation that apparently could linger on through the summer because they're nowhere in the negotiation game. And this is a familiar script for the Dallas Cowboys. We've seen it before from them. They did this very same thing last year. If we take a look, they waited until September 10th to sign Dak Prescott. They waited until August 27th to sign CeeDee Lamb. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that they had moved a little quicker and they signed Dak at the beginning of the offseason in May, around the time that Jared Goff got signed. You can't tell me that Dak Prescott at that time wouldn't have done a deal in the low 50s. I believe he would have. You can't tell me that if CeeDee Lamb had done his deal in late April, that he wouldn't have done a deal for 30, 31, 32. In either case, you're talking about $9, $10 million that the Dallas Cowboys were forced to spend because they didn't act sooner. You know what $9 to $10 million buys you? A running back like Derrick Henry.
Right. Exactly.
Dude.
So that's a great way to lay it out, man. It's a good way to frame it by Schefter. I think two things there, B. Scott, just to make this, to pull the Texans into this thing. I'm so happy that Nick Caserio does business the way that he does business. I don't mind him setting markets for guys. I like getting it done. I think it makes this a place that players like to be. I think it makes it easy for him to work with agents. I think the deals that he's done have by and large been pretty – the ones he's gotten done early – have been good deals for the Texans. Nico Collins in particular has aged into an excellent deal for the Texans. The other thing that's crazy about this Micah Parsons thing is Micah Parsons is inarguably one of the three or four most impactful defensive players in football over the last two or three years. these are usually things, this dance they're having is usually something with a player that caliber you're doing after year three. He's 4 years in now. He's about to head into his fifth-year option. Cowboys are a joke.
Imagine having a Micah Parsons, who I think you could borderline say is a generational talent. I mean, the guy can play. And from this standpoint, he's elite as a pass rusher, but can play damn near any position on the defense for the most part. He's that kind of an anomaly as an athlete. Imagine having somebody like that and jacking around with him and
waiting. Made him an offer.
And waiting until waiting until his fifth-year option to get to this point, and then you're here and you're not talking.
Yeah.
You're not having the conversation. You made the point about Nick Caserio. I agree with everything that you said from a practical standpoint. But here's where I'm at with the Cowboys and in comparison to the Texans. I'm so glad that Nick Caserio, Cal McNair, everybody that's in charge over here at NRG, that these guys aren't attention-seeking in their negotiations.
Right.
Because clearly, as Adam Schefter just laid it out, that crap can cost you money.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe, and I'll go to my grave thinking this, that they just get some kind of thrill out of the attention, out of the commotion that comes around this conversation. And it cost them around $10 million. It possibly cost them a shot at having Derrick Henry and upping the ante on their team. I'm so glad that we don't have figures like that in this building.
Kevin Clark of ESPN had a hilarious quote yesterday. I bookmarked it. We'll play it tomorrow maybe. Where he said, if you went to Jerry Jones and said that the football gods were going to gift you three Super Bowl championships, but you can't do any more press conferences.
Ooh.
I forget how he phrased it. It's much funnier than I'm about to. But basically said Jerry would choose the press conferences.
I would say that their results will be the same that they've been for the last 30 years. They would be championship-less as they have been.
Jacksonville, Cowboys, the other two I'll get to real quick because we're up against it. Pittsburgh with Aaron Rodgers, how that whole thing plays out. This peace and love version of Aaron Rodgers that's coming in here to play a sport that's basically trench warfare.
Aaron Rodgers and Mike Tomlin.
Like, how's that going to go? That's really interesting. And then the Cleveland four-way quarterback battle is something that we can enjoy on so many levels here. One, we don't have a quarterback battle here, thank God, hopefully for the next decade plus. Number two, Deshaun Watson is tangentially still involved in this thing, you know. So those are the two big ones. And number three, it's just intriguing to see what's going to happen. You know, Shedeur Sanders, Dylan Gabriel, Joe Flacco, and who am I missing? Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, I thought the biggest training camp mess that Deshaun Watson would find himself in was 4 years ago when he was out here running scout team, when he was demanding a trade.
No.
I did not foresee that he would be a part of a four to five man quarterback competition out there in Cleveland.
Yeah, or really just a spectator for four guys battling for his job, really.
Yeah. How do they
He's
have
coming
five,
off an Achilles.
How do they have five guys and everybody feels like a man without a country?
Yeah.
No one feels like they belong.
That's fascinating. That's why I can't wait to watch it. And it's not us.
No.
There's a lot of schadenfreude going on with those four camps I just picked. They're all not us, thank God.
Yes.
All right, let's get to headlines. Training camp is here. Maybe a little bit of a warning from one particular NFL head coach to the media on how to, you know, get back in press conference mode. We'll have that in headlines. We'll update you on the injury situation with both the Texans and the Astros. Retirement from a former Texan as well. Prominent one-year Texan. We got a lot to get to, man, in headlines. We got a lot to get to in the 7 o'clock hour as well. We're live at Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. Keep it tuned right here, Sports Radio 610.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, we're live at Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. Practice gets started today at 9 a.m. We're with you till 8 a.m. and we'll hot tag it over to Texans Radio after that. In the Loop will be out here from 10 to 2 today. Updates on the injury situations with the Texans. I'll rapid fire these. These came from an Instagram. This might have been Aaron Wilson who had a lot of these bullet points. Joe Mixon on track to be ready for camp. Could be eased in slowly. He, of course, was in a walking boot during the spring, you know, OTAs and minicamp. Didn't do much. Jalen Noll didn't do anything other than off to the side stuff at mandatory minicamp. The rookie wide receiver, he's on track to be ready to go today. That was a hamstring injury. He's fully recovered. Christian Harris making a, quote, sound recovery from a lingering calf injury. That's one to watch today. Does number 48 run out here? I don't know if it's pads they're doing it in today or if it's just shells. I have no idea. Whatever the attire du jour is 48 out here doing things with everybody else? Fields today. It's a big thing to watch.
Yeah,
today.
And what exactly constitutes this? I'm not trying to pick apart or parse Aaron Wilson's words here, but because of the injury history and what we understand the situation to have been with Christian Harris, what constitutes a sound recovery for this guy? Earlier in the week, Sean, we kind of dabbled a little bit with our potential breakout season candidates for the Texans, and I put Christian Harris in that conversation just for the simple fact that he's somebody that we know to be talented, that we know to have a high ceiling, and just hasn't quite been able to hit it yet because of the injuries, both in the start of his career, his rookie year, and then most recently last year. So I'm very intrigued to see what Christian Harris has to offer, not just in training camp, but throughout the season.
He's had basically a period of time. The amount of time he's been a good football player for this team is literally like 3 months.
Yeah.
And he's heading into his fourth season. There's so much potential there. That's what's so frustrating.
It's like a 10-week span.
Those 3 months were scintillating. They were excellent. He was really, really good.
Dude, I can remember, not to get this off track, but I can remember texting Ron to show Hughley at one point, telling him, man, you know what? Christian Harris sucks. And immediately he like turned into some kind of all-pro, it felt
like. Yeah, it was the middle of the 2023 season. A switch flipped at that, like right around that Tampa Bay-Cincinnati part of the schedule there. Week 9 and 10, it just flipped for him.
Doesn't suck.
Just really cool to see.
Just injured all the time.
Dameon Pierce fully recovered from a quad. Denico Autry is going to be eased into camp. Older player who's been dealing with knee stuff for some time now. The target for Denico Autry is week 1. And then Jimmy Ward, that's a big one too. I would imagine Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryan's both going to get asked Jimmy Ward questions. This is the first chance that either will have had to talk to the media since Jimmy Ward was arrested back in mid-June.
Yeah.
Literally like 5 minutes after we got done interviewing Nick Caserio on Payne and Pendergast, the report comes out about Jimmy Ward. So so this will be the first chance we've heard from Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio meets with the media at 8:30. D'Amico Ryan's after practice today.
Yeah, and I'm not as passionate one way or another about what they do with Jimmy Ward, but I am intrigued by it for a lot of the reasons that we talked about earlier in the week, just the fact that they're not going to be as reliant on him as they were when he first got here.
Yeah.
So that's just another way of saying they don't really need Jimmy Ward, but I understand the history and that there's an affection there. There's a relationship. Mm-hmm. So I'm very intrigued to see how exactly they handle it and how they view this whole legal situation that he's in.
I'm going to save the warning salvo for media members for 7 o'clock because I want to get all our headlines in here. It's not really a headline. It's just a funny bit of audio.
Very funny.
Then I feel like you'll have a good take on because you're at a lot of press conferences.
I will have a take on this.
Okay, good, good. Astros win last night. Bryce Matthews, the hero once again, just one night after hitting his first two career home runs, first two home runs of his career against the Diamondbacks to almost single-handedly win the game on Monday. He does the exact same thing on Tuesday, just one home run this time around, a two-run home run in the top of the eighth with the Astros trailing 1-0. Gets Framber Valdez his 11th win of the season, 13th straight time Framber's taken the mound where the team has gone on to win that game. Framber is the ace of this staff unquestionably right now, just given how Hunter Brown has kind of scuffled over the last few starts. But Bryce Matthews is a big story, B. Scott. Three home runs in two games. Big play to end the game. A double play that just a smash shot to him that he made kind of a, you know, going to the ground, sort of sliding stop on. Was able to turn two to get Brian King out of a bad situation. He was in. Josh Hader unavailable last night just because of workload. Brian King loads the bases in six pitches and then is able to kind of work his way out of it with a strikeout and a double play. And the Astros five games up on the Mariners.
Yeah, the two home runs the previous night won them the game. The home run this night was huge, gave them the lead. But then I think what really won them the game was what you mentioned at the end is the defensive
play. He didn't make that play. It's a 3-3 game.
Yeah, so both things, honestly, because it's the run production and the run prevention. He does gives you the best of both worlds. I think it's really cool. Also, man, as a side note, like Jose Altuve and the move to left field and what Bryce Matthews represents, I'm kind of like from a nostalgic standpoint, think it's kind of cool that you got a potential for a passing of the torch of the second base, the preeminent second baseman of this, you know, of this Astros era. I understand, you know, Craig Biggio, but you got Jose Altuve, an all-time great Astro, potentially passing the torch to Bryce Matthews.
That's cool.
You love to see it.
Yeah, I thought about that. That's cool. Not such good news. Lance McCullers back to the IL. This time a blister on a finger on his pitching hand. They're saying he got, like, I was reading the reports, so, like, they sent him back to Houston to get it looked at. I'm like, it's a blister. I guess I get sending him back to Houston. He's not serving a purpose in Arizona.
Yeah.
But it was just funny. They made a blister sound like one of these things you need an MRI for.
Dude, but it is always some SH with this guy.
He is,
like,
he is
always
snake bitten Lance McCullers.
I love Lance. But, God,
well,
man, get it together.
I think it's an indicator of where Lance is right now as a pitcher, that news came down yesterday and doesn't get nearly the reaction that a Paredes or even a Jake Myers or one of the regulars going down does. Or, you know, or even if it were a pitcher, you know, like, you know, Spencer Arrighetti is a way more crucial asset to this team right now than Lance McCullers is. I would submit the guy pitching today, Brandon Walter, is much more trustworthy right now than Lance McCullers. Let's call it what it is. Lance McCullers, independent of any blister he's got on his right hand, if the postseason started next week, it is a major question mark if he's even on the playoff roster right now.
Yeah, I can personalize this shoulder shrug indifference that you're kind of getting at here. Yesterday when this news come down, I'm tapped in with the Houston Chronicle. I get a notification from Greg Rajan,
yeah,
who wants us to put out a breaking news email to the we had an Astros specific email list, and hey, we got some breaking news here with Lance, and I did the whole thing of I'll do it, but guess what, we don't really this doesn't really hit the
same. It doesn't pop
in terms of breaking news. Like, I'm just not feeling it the way that I would normally feel it.
Yeah.
I did the breaking news alert, but it didn't feel the same.
It didn't at all. Tyrann Mathieu retiring. Drafted in 2013, so Tyrann got in a nice 12-year career.
Yeah,
one of those seasons spent here in Houston in 2018. It kind of feels like a fever dream. You forget about all the guys that kind of came passing through the years. The Tyrann Mathieu, who I would say he's going to be one of those guys, in my opinion, B. Scott. I'm kind of a Hall of Fame enthusiast.
Yeah,
you know, I'm big into the analytics that go into that sort of accolade.
I was literally going to bring it up if you didn't.
Three-time first-team All-Pro. Unfortunately, one of those seasons was not 2018, but he was very good for the Texans, and I thought, you know, real good leader. I would have brought him back. Three-time Pro Bowler. 2010 All-Decade Team is the interesting one. If you make the three-time All-Pro is one of those, you're going to be on the ballot every year. You'll be one of the 25, maybe even get down to 15 or 10 at a time, you know, the finalists. It's not a lock that you ever make it, let alone be like a first ballot guy. The All-Decade Team is an interesting one.
Yeah,
the vast majority of those guys make the Hall of Fame. I wouldn't be offended if Tyrann Mathieu got put in the Hall of Fame. You know what I do think his future? I think he'd be really good on TV.
Yes.
Every interview I ever watched with him, very thoughtful, very intelligent,
yes,
and very football intelligent, like very conventional intelligent, but very, very high football IQ. I think he would be really, really good. And there's so many outlets for these guys nowadays. You know, before it was just, well, we'll go to ESPN, I'll be a studio guy. He can do his own streaming if he wants to. He can, you know, collaborate with somebody, whatever. He was always somebody I always enjoyed listening to speak.
Conventional intelligent and about as football intelligent as you'll find, right?
Ivy League football.
Maybe underrated smart football player. And you could even tell that going back to the LSU days, which were in and of themselves like a movie. You know, I know that things ended poorly there for him, but like when he was playing, man, he was one of the few guys that, you know, didn't play quarterback or running back, but he basically played everything else.
He was a Heisman finalist.
And honestly had a decent case to win it. So I'm right there with you. The All-Decade Team is an interesting part of like his story and how that, you know, what kind of case that makes for him in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
My analytical hardline on the Hall of Fame, it's like if you make five All-Pros, I feel like they shouldn't even vote. They should just let you – because
That should be like the benchmark.
If you get five All-Pros, and I got a hard time finding a guy that's got five All-Pros that's not a Hall of Famer.
Right.
He's got three,
and
then I feel like the All-Decade Team is like an extra one that's kind of like four. He's borderline there. He's probably not a first ballot, but I'd be shocked if he doesn't get in.
It's harder to get in now. They've made it harder, by the way. They did, not to get too nerdy into it, and people are in their cars, and it's a little complicated, but they've – changed how they do the voting down the stretch when they get down to the finalists, and that's why there's only four guys going in this year.
Right.
It's a little harder to get in. So I'd be totally cool with it. I really enjoyed having him on the team here for a year. So congrats to him, man. Great career. Won a couple Super Bowls, at least one.
He won the one, but he was a big part of it.
Huge part of it. His first team All Pro.
Huge part of that Super Bowl run.
Into the 7 o'clock hour we go here live at Texans training camp. Sun coming up, people starting to roll in. Going to be a great season, man. Cannot wait. We're going to talk about it here in the next segment. Where is the AFC South exactly in the tapestry of the NFL? We'll get into that. And the warning shot for media members, don't be on your phone if this head coach is the guy you're asking questions. So it's a guy we're very familiar with here in Houston. We'll do that coming up next. Stay there.